Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Cheryl Hardy, FAA Production Studios Public Relations and National FAST Team Representative of the Year from Orlando, Florida, who is today's host.
Good afternoon and welcome to Managing Safety. This is Cheryl Hardy with the FAA Production Studios coming to you on the field at Lakeland Regional Airport from the FAA Production Studios at the FAST Team National Resource Center. And this is Managing Safety. Welcome to the show today, and we have our guest today is Mr. Phil Lockwood. He's the president of Lockwood Aviation Group. Phil, welcome to the show today.
Great to be here with you.
Now, Phil, we had a really great program here at the studio today. Can you tell us a little bit about the program today? It was sport aviation, so tell us why you're here.
Well, I came to, of course, speak about Rotax and safety, maintenance, operation, and different features of the engine. You had some great other speakers as well.
We did.
Dean talking about the airframe differences and maintaining the airframes, and Kirk from Dynon did a great job talking about EFIS in general, the new flat-screen displays.
That was great. It was a great program.
And Jim with the Seaplane Pilots Association.
Now, this was our 19th seminar for this program today for the sport aviation. Can you tell us a little bit about how many times you've been here to the studio and your experience here at the studio?
I'm not sure. I mean, they mentioned something about 19 years. I know I've been coming here for a while. I can't believe it's that long. But it's a great program, and I'm really happy to support it.
We appreciate it, and we appreciate you being here. Now, you did your program today on the Rotax engine, the 912 series, and I'd like to touch base on that a little bit. I know those that viewed today were able to see your program, but for our listeners, so that they can tune in and download this program from iTunes, I'd like to kind of give them a little verbal without the pictures on what your program was about today. So if you could just kind of give us a little starting on how you opened your program on the 912 series.
Sure. Well, we talked about the different features of the engine, the fact that over 20,000 of them have been built, that it has been in production for over 20 years now. Most people don't realize that, that being one of the most modern aircraft engines out there, that it could have actually been around for 20 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that represents the opportunity for a lot of refinement, and that refinement has, in fact, taken place. And we now, as a result of those 20 years, have a great product. And not that they didn't work well 20 years
ago.
That's
right.
But I tell you, the improvements, and when you have aircraft in the field in hundreds of different types of airplanes, you will run into different installation issues that could not have been predicted in a test cell or in any kind of test program. And even though the engine was fully certificated right from the get-go, FAR 33, I mean, fully certificated, it's still, we learned a lot from all these different people flying these engines in all different types of pusher applications, tractor, twin engine, I mean, you name it, airboats, I mean, they put them in everything. And those little bits of refinement went into the engine, allowed us to raise the TBO gradually. And now with a real 2,000-hour TBO. So I think that's something a lot of people don't realize. And other features of the engine we talked about in the beginning, the fact that they're very, very quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very compact, lightweight engine. We talked about why all those things are. Why is it by far the most popular engine in light sport with 80% market share worldwide? It's to do with the way the engine was designed. Only approximately 83 cubic inches versus a typical Lycoming or a Continental 0200, which is 100 horsepower also, but it requires 200 cubic inches to achieve the same power output. And that's a significant difference in cylinder size and the overall required size of the engine.
Now, to me, that's huge.
Yep, it's a big difference. And that's part of where our weight saving and our size savings comes in. And then we talked about the gearbox. A lot of people are afraid of a gearbox. They think of a geared engine as, oh my goodness me, it's going to be a problem. And Rotax knew that to make the engine that small and to keep it as light as possible, they would have to have a gearbox. And so we talked about how the engine from the onset was designed only to be with the gearbox. It's actually cast into the crankcase as part of the gearbox, the back side of it.
You talked then, too, a little bit about your ceramic cylinder wall.
Yeah, that's one of the, I think, one of the really great features that is often misunderstood. It's an aluminum cylinder, very, very lightweight, with a Nicosil coating on it. And I think a lot of people don't realize that that is now becoming fairly common, even in automotive use, whereas BMW and Porsche, and I'm sure there are some other companies now as well, have been using that process for quite some time. It allows us to have very tight tolerances. We can have between 0 and 8 tenths of a thousandth of an inch piston to cylinder clearance on startup with a new engine because we have an aluminum cylinder and an aluminum piston, and they expand and contract together. And then we control our temperatures much better than an air-cooled engine because we have a liquid-cooled cylinder head.
Now, what does that mean for durability, longevity of cylinder
life? It means a lot because it means we don't have to worry about shock cooling. If you're doing flight training with a 912, because of the water-cooled cylinder heads, it's not a problem to snatch the throttle back and make a steep descent and then go to full power because you have that reservoir of coolant, which acts like a temperature buffer. It takes a little time to move it up in temperature, takes a little time to move it down in temperature, and so it's gradually moving up and down versus an air-cooled engine where, boom, you get that shock treatment. When you stop producing heat and you still have that same rush of air over the cylinders, boom, suddenly it cools down very quickly. And then you have another problem. You've usually got an aluminum piston and a steel cylinder, and they're changing size at different rates with the temperature change. And that's one of the reasons they have to have much larger clearances, and another part of the reason they tend to burn a lot more oil.
You talked a little bit about your internal power generation on the engine as well. Independent power for ignition. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, the engine was designed from the onset to have electronic ignition, and it's a dual system, completely redundant. And I talked about why it's different from an automotive system.
Mm-hmm.
In a car, car ignitions run off of DC. They run right off the battery. And then there's an alternator that charges the battery. And that works great. It's a simple system. However, if your alternator should fail for any reason, once the battery voltage drops down below a certain level, the engine will stop running. We didn't really want to have that as a possibility. So our system is a DC system where the ignition runs right off the coils in the engine. And, of course, there are two separate coils so that if you ever have a problem with either one of them, it's going to keep running.
So we've got the redundancy. We've got that extra safety check and backup. So to me as a pilot, that's a tremendous feature to have.
Yeah, the ignition system works well. And having a dual electronic ignition system is a great feature for troubleshooting because you know, if they're having a miss or some kind of an operational issue, you ask them, well, did you do a mag check? Were both ignition systems working? And they say yes. At that point, you can pretty much rule out ignition. You know it's got to be carburation if they're having a miss or something. So it's helpful there as well.
Now, we went in a little bit, you talked a little bit about the 2,000-hour TBO and the advantages of the Nicosil. How does that work in terms of the advantages to bring it to a 2,000-hour TBO?
Well, you know, both those items were there right from the beginning. The Nicosil cylinder does help with the 2,000-hour TBO because it's so resistant to wear. Nickel is one of the best metals that we know of today to resist abrasion, and it's actually used in slurry pumps where they pump an abrasive material, small stones, even sand in water, and they will often manufacture those pumps or line them with nickel. And so the nickel-silicon combination that we use on our cylinder walls is very, very resistant to wear. And in fact, we just don't have cylinder problems. They'll go to TBO easily, and they'll go again.
That's fantastic. That's huge. Now, to me, that's a huge advantage. We talked a little bit about the types of Rotax training that's available. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. We have a school at our facility, and I think there are several places you can go for training around the country. But because our facility has so many technicians working and there are so many aircraft being worked on at any given time, we usually have at least six mechanics on the floor, that it does give you a great experience to come and see an operation of that size with all that's going on when you come to learn about the engines. We have a dedicated classroom. We have a great instructor. Dean does a super job. The first class we offer is a service class. It's a two-day course, and that can be followed up by a maintenance class. Service class teaches you all the basic things that you need to know about basic maintenance. And then the service class goes beyond that and gets into troubleshooting, removing components, sending them off for repair or overhaul, and then reinstalling them. And then if you want to go deeper, you can get into a heavy maintenance class, and that actually involves repairing or overhauling components. And each one of those is a two-day segment.
That's fantastic. I'd highly recommend anybody getting into Rotax. I think that's very important and very critical for them to be able to come down to your facility and take those programs.
We get great reviews from the people that take them. And we get a lot of pilots taking the service course.
That's excellent.
Even though it's something a mechanic would want to take as well, obviously, but the mechanics get a lot out of it, or the pilots get a lot out of that.
We're going to take a break for just a moment, and then we're going to come back with Phil to Managing Safety. So we'll be back with you shortly.
Now, let's rejoin Cheryl Hardy and Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios.
Welcome back to Managing Safety. This is Cheryl Hardy on the field here at the Lake and Linda Regional Airport at the FAA Production Studios at the Fast Team National Resource Center with Phil Lockwood from Lockwood Aviation Group. Welcome back, Phil.
Good to be back.
Well, Phil, we started the program with a good bit of an overview of the Rotax and some of its benefits and features. Tell us a little bit about where we can get some more information on the aircraft engine manuals.
The factory, Rotax factory, has a great website that can be accessed anytime on the web at rotax-aircraft-engines.com. And there you can find all of the manuals that can be downloaded as a PDF file and service bulletins, all the service information. So, and those manuals have been updated recently, and they're very good, from the operator's manual to the installation manual.
Are there updates that come out regularly, or do you recommend people check back regularly
the
site?
Well, sure. Yeah, they're constantly upgrading and improving things. I don't think we've had a mandatory service bulletin on the 9 Series engines for a couple of years now, which is a great thing.
It is. That's huge.
Yeah, it's part of that refinement thing. I think the engines we're getting today are the best we've ever had. And then the Rhone site is also a great source of information at rotax-owner.com.
Okay.
And that site has some expanded video instructions, how to change the oil, different videos that are very, very helpful. And also, you have our site, which links a number of different sites, the Lockwood-Aviation.com site. So lots of good information on the web.
Lots of good information out there, and we urge everybody to go to all those resources to get that information. Coming back to your program, you did some carburetor tips. You talked a little bit about carburetor, and you had a few items that you went over as far as tips. Would you like to elaborate on any of those?
Sure. The 912 utilizes a dual carb system, two Bing constant velocity carburetors. Those carburetors do a pretty good job of controlling the mixture. From sea level to about 10,000 feet, they'll keep the mixture right about where it needs to be. So that's a nice feature. So you don't see a mixture control on Rotax-powered airplanes. You talked about how the carburetors should be synchronized when they're initially set up and when a new engine is installed. And that's done with dual vacuum gauges, or we have a tool that gives you a digital indication as to which way you need to go to get them synchronized. And I didn't mention it in the presentation, but that's really no more than mechanically adjusting the carburetors so that both of the carburetors pull the same manifold pressure or vacuum. And it's actually a fairly simple process once you understand how to do it. We talked about the idle speeds, mm-hmm. and the fact that minimum idle is 1400 RPM. And that when setting the idle, you should note that the engine typically gains about 200 RPM as it's warming up. And that makes 1600 RPM warm a pretty ideal target idle speed for most airplanes.
Yes, it is.
And then we also mentioned the 1800 is normally the highest idle speed that we want to see. If you go much beyond that, you'll get too much pull at idle when you're taxiing and when you're trying to land.
Now, from what you said, synthetic oil is a preferred oil?
Well, synthetic oil, if you have the right oil. We've had good results with Mobil 1 motorcycle oil, except when it's used with 100LL. Many of the, probably most of the full synthetics, don't react well with tetraethyl lead. And you can have a lead paste that will form within the engine and block the oil passageways. That's the reason that Mobil pulled their aviation oil off the market.
I see.
After a fairly short time, they didn't realize that that was going to happen. But if you're using unleaded auto gas, mm-hmm. that seems to be a good product. Another product that we are really happy to have right now is the new Shell. And I don't have any interest in Shell personally. I don't even own any of their stock. So I don't really have any reason to promote it other than the fact that I do think it's a good product.
And there you go.
We're quite happy to have that dedicated Shell product. It's called Oil Sport Plus 4 for the 9 Series. And I'll tell you why. We have found that many manufacturers who make different oils for motorcycles and cars, they're constantly changing their formulas. They may tell you that they've changed it. They may not tell you they've changed it. Depends on why and what they're doing to it. But often, changes that will be an advantage to a car will be a disadvantage to an airplane. And there can be, problems can take place because of those changes that weren't anticipated. And we've seen that firsthand with oils that worked great 1 month. You get the next batch, and all of a sudden, you have people losing oil pressure because the oil is foaming within the engine. So with the Shell, we kind of have a guarantee that they're not going to change the formulation of the oil without testing it first.
So we've got a known consistent factor there.
That's right. And it's they're the only manufacturer that's given us that guarantee that they're making an oil that we know is going to work well on our airplane, and we know they're working with Rotax. And if they do change it, it's to improve it, not because they need to take out an additive that's having an adverse effect on catalytic converters on, some motor vehicle.
That's something to be noted, and, it's not something that everybody would consider. So that's important information,
mm-hmm. Yeah, without it a is. Doubt. And that oil that they have is a semi-synthetic, and so it works well with both the avgas and the unleaded auto gas.
Another excellent point.
Yep.
Let's talk about the oil change hour limits.
Okay. The standard, the typical, is 50 hours. That's what most people go by. It is possible to extend that to as far as 100 hours. That's Hobbs time, not tack time. Actual hard time. To go as far as, if you're using unleaded fuel, strictly unleaded fuel, with either a full synthetic or the new semi-synthetic Shell. And we have been doing that with our flight school airplanes at Lockwood. We were running 2 912Ss with, and we've been running that Shell product going 100 hours, and Shell's been monitoring the quality of the oil at the end of the oil change, and it's been working well. If you're using avgas some of the time, 50-50 mix or that sort of thing, you need to at least pull it back to 50 hours. And if you're using avgas all the time, then we recommend as much as a 25-hour, at least 33, which would be 3 changes per 100 hours.
Are the octane levels critical in your fuel?
Well, sure. If you're using a 912S or a turbocharged 914, you need at least 91 octane in the auto gas.
Okay.
If you're using a 912 80 horsepower engine, the 81 horsepower version, I should say, you can get away with 87 octane regular. It's one of the big advantages, actually, of the lower compression version of the engine.
What about the use of fuel stabilizers?
Well, one of the disadvantages of autogas is that it does deteriorate fairly rapidly when it's in a vented container. And unfortunately, our carburetors and our fuel tanks, as in boats, are vented all the time. And so that allows the fuel to deteriorate. I mean, 2 months is probably the maximum that you'd want an airplane to sit with autogas in it without stabilizer.
Okay.
So, and the stabilizers, we sell one made by Pennzoil, and there's another one made by a company called Stabil. I don't know who makes it, but the product's called Stabil. And they both seem to work quite well, really almost like magic.
How about alcohol testing? I know you touched a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm,
Give us
yeah.
a little overview.
Yeah, we have a test kit that we sell. It's a fuel sumper that it can double as a fuel sumper. And it's a simple way to verify how much, if any, alcohol is in the fuel. You simply fill it with water to a set level, pour the gasoline on top of it, shake it up, and then just wait a few moments, and the fuel will, the water will separate back out in the bottom of the beaker. And if there is any alcohol, that alcohol will separate out, mix with the water, and the level of the water will appear to grow. And depending on how much it goes up, that tells you how much alcohol you have. Quick, easy way to check.
That is. It's a very quick, easy way to check. Couldn't be simpler. The new ignition system. I noticed you spoke a bit about that.
Well, they've improved the ignition modules. It happened about a year ago. I think starting with the 2010 engines, we got a new timing retard system, which I think was a great improvement. The engine goes from normally from 26 degrees before top dead center back to, I believe it's 4 degrees before top dead center when you're starting to help stop it from kicking back. And this new system, instead of jumping up to the 26 degrees before top dead center at a certain RPM window, in other words, when the engine hits a certain RPM, it'll trigger it to go into advanced spark mode. It waits so many seconds after you release the starter. So it stays in the retarded position for longer. It also, instead of going back to 4 degrees before, it goes 3 degrees after top dead center. So it's a more aggressive retard, and it makes for a much smoother start. It really works well. So that has been standard now for about a year.
Well, all in all, the 9 Series package and some of the changes and things that have been made sound absolutely fantastic. And I think it's definitely something that all our light sport aircraft lovers need to take a look at. That's for sure.
Well, we think so. I fly the engines as well as other Lycoming Continental powered airplanes. And it's fairly easy for me to get enthusiastic about the engine because I really think it's a great product. It works well.
Tell us about the event coming up in Sebring. I hear there's a great sport aviation event coming
up.
Sure,
the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo. That begins on Thursday, January 20th, mm-hmm. runs for 4 days, the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I think it's a half day on Sunday. It is a unique show in that it's dedicated to light sport aircraft. There are others, I shouldn't say unique now, but it was unique when we started it.
Sure.
And the people who come to the show seem to really like the fact that we don't have an air show and that we are focusing and flying the light sport airplanes all day long. Mm-hmm. That way it's much easier to get demonstration flights in. The manufacturers like it for the same reason. Also, instead of a huge crowd where you have a lot of people who are coming to see an air show primarily, not to buy an airplane or a GPS, mm-hmm. Here you have very serious enthusiasts. that fly in just to look at these light sport aircraft and the accessories that are displayed there. And you're much more likely to get a chance to talk to a technical rep from a manufacturer, whether it's Dynon, you're looking to talk to them about an EFIS, or whether it's Cessna or Remos or Flight Design, whoever, you're going to get a better chance of getting FaceTime with somebody who really knows what they're talking about. So from both sides, the people who come to see these airplanes and the manufacturers, you know, they know that they're not going to have to weed through the manufacturers, I say, weed through, you know, 10 or 20 people that really just came to see an air show and want to know how much it costs. They're going to be more likely to have 10 people that that may want to buy an airplane.
Sure. It's a target audience, and it's going to be a good place to see you as well, Lockwood Aviation Supply.
Sure. Yep, we'll be
so
there.
So everybody can get some good FaceTime with you, too.
Well, we're on the field.
So
and I'll be giving several safety seminars there. I think I've got one Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. But the show rocketed to great success very quickly. And last year, I think we had a record crowd. And everything is looking good. I think our indoor space is sold out. And our pre-ticket sales are the highest they've been. So it looks like we're set up for a great, great year again. Great
That's show. Fantastic. Now tell everybody again how to get a hold of you.
Well, you can call us at the shop, which is what a lot of people do, at 863-655-5100. Or if you want to order something, 1-800-LA-ROTAX.
Is your website?
Easy, yeah, for Lockwood Aviation ROTAX. The website is Lockwood-aviation.com.
Okay.
If you're interested in the AirCam, if you just hit aircam.com or Google AirCam, you'll be there.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, I look forward to seeing you at Sebring. Hugh and I will be down there on the field, and we'll come try and look you up so we can visit while we're there. And it should be a great event. So it's been a very exciting day. It's been a long day today, but I appreciate you being here. It was a great program. Do you have any other parting words you'd like to send out to our listeners?
Well, no, Cheryl, I appreciate the chance to talk with you today, and you guys do a great job.
Thank you so much, Phil. It's a pleasure to have you here. This is Cheryl Hardy for Managing Safety. Listen in next time.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.